Hello and welcome to the podcast Sport and Life. We'll get to the show in just a second, but first a word to the sponsors. Chief sponsors, been with us a number of years now. Big thank you to Bang Olufsen Cheltenham and Serene AV, specialists in some of the finest home entertainment brands, providing solutions based around high quality customer service and installations. Look up Serene AV online or head to Jason Briggs's beautiful Cheltenham store, the courtyard there in the Montpellier area of the town. If you're looking to optimize your immunity, remember the podcast has a long-standing relationship with Cytoplan's food-based supplements. I've been taking them for 20 years under the stewardship of my father, Dr. Mark Draper, more than 20 years now. And with the podcast, you get 30% off your first purchase, 10% ongoing with the discount code. And this is a new code, by the way, Draper10X. So my last name, Draper, all capital letters, the numbers 10 and the capital letter X. That's at cytoplan.co.uk at checkout. cytoplan.co.uk. Now, numerous factors can hinder your athletic potential. However, what if I told you your fitness of your 100 trillion cells might be the problem? Well, Cell Nutrition Sport are the only company that works on fitness at a deep cellular level and have developed a protocol called Cellular Fitness, consisting of everything your cell needs to be fit. The protocol is 100% natural, harvested from the ocean, not manufactured in a lab or a warehouse. The Cellular Fitness Protocol is made up of Hydrate 78, which is from marine plasma, providing 78 plus electrolytes and trace elements that your body needs in ionic form. Hydrate 78 provides complete recovery, eradicate cramps, and enhances your stamina, while Hydrate 78 Night allows you to remineralize while you sleep, giving a higher rate of deeper sleep, which results in complete repair and stronger immunity. I've been taking this for a couple of months now and found a real boost of not only my workouts, but just general well-being and feelings of hydration and fitness. But find out more at cellularfitness.world and you can use the code TED10, T-E-D, all capital letters, numbers 10 for 10% off your entire basket. Well, thanks for listening to all that. Onwards and upwards with the show. Here we go. Hello, welcome back to Sport and Life, everyone. I'm back from the man flu just in time to get the wonderful Michael Bridge heralded in December. Now he joins the podcast. Morning, Bridgie, how are you doing?
Morning, Teddy. Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Very well. All good now. Someone said to me at school drop-off today, they said you looked absolutely terrible earlier in the week, but now you look slightly better. So I was like, okay, I'll take that then after my flu.
That's the best compliment you ever had, isn't it? Slightly better than terrible.
Put
that on all your social media profiles.
Yeah, I'll have to announce that one, I think. Tom, you good?
Yes, very well, thank you. This is our first one of the year, isn't it? Because of illness, isn't it?
I think we did one at the very first week of January, I think, about transfers, and we got our surprise transfers to come as well. Yes.
Yeah, you're right. And we managed to secure Bridgie with just a few days left in the window as well. So you better make the most of it.
Yeah, what have you made of the transfer window so far, Bridgie?
I mean, in terms of we can all relate to this as well, from a work point of view, challenging. You know, it's been the quietest I think I can ever remember. From a personal point of view, it's been a very good window for Tottenham. I think they're the only club to have actually spent. Ange Postecoglou wanted a defender. He's got him. And, you know, then Spurs, you know, insisted to me that Werner is a bit of a bonus because of Son being away, a risk-free loan. So yeah, it's been good for Spurs. But in terms of the window itself, you know, we can see these profit and sustainability rules, they do have genuine teeth. So I think a lot of people are just waiting until the summer. I'm sure it'll come back busy again in the summer.
Yeah, I think as well as it's worth mentioning that Tottenham made all this money as well, haven't they? That's been a big thing, I think, that they've announced, what was it, the Daniel Levy making all the cash with the stuff. So Spurs got money to spend.
Yeah, I think, you know, I know Spurs get a lot of people sort of jab them in the ribs about trophies and everything like that, but they're bringing in a hell of a lot of money. They're very well run, and they've overtaken Chelsea now in terms of income and everything with the latest Deloitte figures. Look, they're the Deloitte figures. They're not some cowboy organisation. They are official figures. So, You know, they're well run. So, but that means, you know, and I think they've got a very, very good manager, the right manager for the club at the moment. So, look, I'm not going to say much more because Spurs, it usually ends in tears. So I'm just going to stop there. I'm going to stop there, Teddy.
Right. Well, let's talk your top five then and set the time frame for this, because I think Tom's a couple of years younger than me. I think you might be a little bit younger than Tom, although he's ageless, of course. But where do we start viewing Tottenham as a young Michael Bridge?
Honestly, I'm sure you get this with every person you speak to in terms of their favourite five players. You know, this is really hard. The first one I went for actually was because when I was really young, I had my first shirt, Holsten and the Umbro. It was like just beginning to really understand it was Paul Gascoigne and the feel of what he had. And admittedly, I was just a little bit too young for his early days at Spurs, but I knew how special he was. And then when that came into Euro 96, I think that was my first, you know, international tournament of really remembering it, like really vividly, because obviously England didn't qualify for USA 94. And it was kind of pride that you knew this guy played for your football club. And obviously there was loads about it, and there's countless documentaries now. Sir Alex Ferguson very open about wanting to have signed him. And he's, you know, we'll never prove this is the case, but obviously Ferguson very strong in the sense that if he'd have been in Manchester, I would have helped him more, and London wasn't good for him. Maybe Sir Alex was right about that, but we'll never know. But he had some extraordinary memorable moments. The one that obviously stands out to Tottenham fans was the free kick at Wembley, which was the first ever semi-final to be played at Wembley, because the ticket allocation, the demand was too much. So that was played at Wembley, and they've been at Wembley pretty much ever since, apart from a bit of Villa Park in the late 90s. So, yeah, just special. And he's still someone who, I mean, I bumped into him in Sandbanks a few years ago, genuinely bumped into him. And my mum got quite emotional because he was so skinny and, you know, she held on to him for ages, look after yourself. And, you know, we still see things in the newspapers which we don't want to read. So, you know, I'm always hoping that he's okay. And he's someone I just feel very strongly with. You know, and I think everyone would agree with that. A lot of people probably wouldn't put him in the Tottenham top five, but I think he'd be in my football top five as well.
Yeah, with Gascoigne as well. When I mean, he was one of my first ever heroes, because as listeners know, I got into football in the 1990 World Cup. So him and Sir Bobby Robson were real heroes. And I always tell the story of, when people say who's the favourite person in football you ever met, I always say Sir Bobby Robson, because it was just, to have been in his company for about 20 minutes was like just an absolute pleasure. Whereas the one time I met Gazza, he was not well at all. And it was actually really, really upsetting. But that goal against Arsenal you were talking about, I've kind of got, in a way, at that age, I felt like I had a bit of an affiliation with Tottenham, because I loved Lineker from the 1990 World Cup. I've still got T-shirts with Paul Gascoigne on from back then. Loved him. And then back then, there wasn't very much football on the TV. So if you fast forward to the end of that 1990-91 season, one of the few games I did watch was that goal from Gascoigne against Arsenal in the semi-final. And of course, the final against Nottingham Forest, where Tottenham won the FA Cup. And that made me love Erik Porsved, made me love Terry Venables, who then became an even bigger legend when he had, you know, a certain amount of success with England as well. And I loved Gary Mabbutt as well, just because he was such a gentleman too. So that team back then that Tottenham had in the early 90s was something that, although I've obviously always been a Sunderland fan, back then I did like Tottenham because of the amount of players that they had that I liked.
Yeah, so that connection almost the modern times as well with Harry Kane, isn't it, with England as well? There's a big, big thread there.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing about that FA Cup final was he actually committed a terrible, terrible challenge, which actually he was probably never the same player-wise after that. And it should have been sent off, really. It was an absolutely abysmal challenge. I think it was on Gary Charles.
Yeah.
And it stopped. I mean, this was huge at the time because Spurs had huge financial difficulties. They were terribly run. And the Lazio transfer was going to partly help it, and that had to be delayed. But it was such a humongous transfer at the time, and him going to Lazio, and he was adored at Lazio. And then I remember Spurs playing two friendlies against Lazio, which was covering the deal, which is sort of similar. Maybe you mentioned Harry Kane. I think a little bit of potential exclusive for this podcast. You know, I'm hearing that Spurs might be playing Bayern Munich in a pre-season friendly. And that is an exclusive to this podcast.
Beautiful. Yeah,
so,
I love
yeah,
it.
So it's not a confirmation yet, but there was talk of that. But yeah, he just great person. And I think we can all, even Arsenal fans, Chelsea fans, West Ham fans who don't like Spurs, they'd all say we love Gazza. And then that's so, but I mean, look, I'm sure, as you say, on every podcast, it's been really hard to get it down to five. And I'm looking forward at the end of the podcast to tell you about the ones you've just missed out.
That's the same with Gascoigne. I mean, Gascoigne's Newcastle through and through, but Sunderland fans and that's the same with Sir Bobby Robson as well. There are people like that. The question I asked Sir Bobby Robson when I was lucky enough to meet him was, why is it that you are one of the few people who were loved by Sunderland fans and Newcastle fans? Because there's not very many. And he looked at me like quite surprised and he said, it's a very nice thing to say. No one's ever asked me that. He goes, I think it might just be because of England, you know, like really kind of quite taken aback by me saying that some fans actually loved him as well, you know, and that's the same thing. I think with Gascoigne, you just appreciate it, don't you?
Well, on Gascoigne, by the way, on my Twitter yesterday, I shared one of those nostalgic 90s video accounts and they had Gascoigne 90 to 91, scored, I think, 19 goals from midfield. And off the back of the World Cup where Tom and I have talked about falling in love, that season, he was ridiculous. So for younger listeners, viewers, definitely worth going back and looking at the highlights. Because one thing you forget, Tom, is how good he was on his left foot, because he could shake both ways. He'd beat players both ways. And actually so many finishes in that 1991 season on his left foot, like swept into the far corner or driven in at the near post. He was just the all-round genius. And I think people maybe who came to him later forget how good he was then.
Yeah, who's your number two then, Bridgie?
Oh, guys, quickly, let me, before you do that, do my quiz question, because it relates to the 91 FA Cup final, which Tottenham obviously won 2-1 the last time they won the FA Cup. It's FA Cup weekend this weekend, so it's kind of fitting. Spurs playing Man City tonight on the Friday, which is arguably the tie of the round, to be fair. But 91 FA Cup final, who scored the first goal in the FA Cup final? We'll give the answer away at the end. You may well know, Bridgie, it's another legend of England as well. So people, it's a little clue, but we'll wrap that up at the end. So Bridgie, number two,
this is a really, really, really easy one for me. Jurgen Klinsmann, 1994. Spurs back then, we were lower mid-table, nearly got relegated under Ozzy Ardiles the season before in the 93-94 season. Before our days of transfer shows, Twitter, Instagram, the best thing, and I loved it, teletext, CFAX, whatever you want to call it, buying a newspaper. I'll never forget my dad coming home, front page, Tottenham have signed Jurgen Klinsmann. There was a picture of Alan Sugar on a boat in Monaco with Jurgen Klinsmann. He was the player of the USA 94 World Cup. And I pick him for, you know, even in the 90s, it was awful going to school in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I'm from Enfield. And in my school, you either supported Arsenal or Tottenham Hotspur. There was no, there was nothing. There was not one Chelsea fan, not one West Ham fan. I genuinely mean Arsenal or Tottenham. And they got Arsene Wenger and they won everything. And we were finishing 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th. But that 94-95 in the summer, when he came, and there's a really great picture. We played Watford in a pre-season friendly and Watford fans ran onto the pitch at Vicarage Road and he was covered in support, autographs, you name it. Watford supporters. And his first game against Sheffield Wednesday, the header, the 4-3 at Hillsborough. And then obviously people, when he came, they said, nah, he's a diver. We don't want a diver in the Premier League. What does Jurgen do with Teddy Sheringham? They do the dive. And then I remember I couldn't wait to go to the first home game and it was a Tuesday. It was a couple of days later. He scored, I think he scored both that day as well. One was a scissor overhead kick. And look, I'm picking someone who only spent a season with us and then he came back on a loan a few years later. But it was just, when I was young, it was like this club are in bottom half of the league in a bad way and they've just gone and signed the biggest name, biggest striker in football. And I think that, you know, even in the 90s and early noughties when things weren't going well at Tottenham, they always had that capability of bringing someone special in. And that one was Klinsmann. And it was just something I always remember. I remember getting the purple shirt as a kid, Klinsmann 18. So, yeah, Klinsmann's my second choice.
It's a breakthrough moment for the Premier League as a kid, wasn't it, Tom? Not being a Tottenham fan, for someone of Klinsmann's stature to come to the league, was it another huge boost?
It was huge. And the same, it was actually the same with Arsenal and Bergkamp as well, because Sunderland, the Premier League, were kind of getting criticised for only signing quality players who were past their peak at the time. Mm. And then Bergkamp came, Klinsmann came, and we were actually getting the top stars. And they were signings that really changed things. And Klinsmann just worked so well. Well, Bridgie's got that. You wore it to my birthday one year, didn't you? Absolutely.
It's not the same one.
It was a massive one that for Tottenham, like Bridgie said, but it was for the whole Premier League as well, because it proved that we could actually attract the top players at their peak.
What was it, the famous five? Because it was Ozzy Ardiles. He didn't actually last that long, did he, at the time? But yeah,
no.
Dumitrescu on the left, yeah. Anderton Bambi. On the right, Bambi, yeah. And yeah. Sheringham and Klinsmann. That was, yeah. It was just brilliant to watch for a few weeks.
It was. God, he'd kill me if he heard this, but like with Ange Postecoglou, with the attacking, but with Ozzy Ardiles, we just no fourth. There was no thinking behind it. You know, it just seemed a bit messy. And ultimately, it wasn't going to last, and it didn't last because I think we lost to Notts County that season 3-0 in the League Cup, and he was sacked. And Jerry Francis came in, steadied the ship, and actually did a really good job. And we ended up finishing seventh, which seems quite low, given the calibre of players, because Anderton and Sheringham were on the cusp of England, and they eventually became key players under Terry Venables a couple of years later. But it felt like a glamour signing. It was a glamour signing. So, and I could just feel it, even when away fans came to the stadium, that they wanted to see Jürgen Klinsmann.
Yeah,
you've all heard the story of Steve Howie's story about Ozzy Ardiles at Newcastle, haven't you? You've all heard that. For any of the listeners, right, you've got to look it up. I think it might have been on Under the Cosh, but if you just type into Google or YouTube, Steve Howie, Ozzy Ardiles, this story will come up. And basically, I can't tell it in the way Steve Howie told it, but he says, yeah, Ozzy had this thing where we'd be on the training pitch, there'd be 11 of us, but we'd be playing against no one. It was all about just keeping the ball, right? There was no opposition. they didn't really buy into it. It was like, okay, so kick off, whoever was up front at the time, I don't know, but I was probably... after Mick Quinn, it might be David Kelly maybe or someone, would give it back to the central midfielder. Central midfielder would give it back to the centre-back, Steve Howie. And Steve Howie says, so the ball comes back to him. And from there, the centre-back had to knock it back to the goalkeeper, who was Tommy Wright. So Steve Howie gets the ball, knocks it back to Tommy Wright, not realising Tommy Wright had bent down to take a sip out of his water. and the ball rolled in the goal. And Steve Howie ends up saying, we're 1-0 down. We weren't even playing anyone.
Brilliant.
But you've got to look that up. And Teddy, if you haven't heard that, first thing you've got to do after this, because he tells it a lot better than me. It is brilliant.
I've got to listen to it. I love that. I love listening to that. But I think that's, going back to our dealers and that Tottenham side, that's kind of what I think a lot of people have a soft spot for Spurs for our generation. It was Lineker, it was Gascoigne, but it was also just the entertainment factor. And I guess you talked about Bridgie lacking the trophies, but that's what people associate Spurs with, and maybe what Ange has cottoned onto quite cleverly is it's about entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, that 94-95 season, genuinely, it feels like yesterday, because like we got to the FA Cup semi-final that season as well, and we beat Liverpool away in the quarter-final, and it was Sheringham-Klinsmann combination. Brilliant goal from Sheringham, who was just such a class player. And the semi-final was Everton-Tottenham at Elland Road, and I think Manchester United in the other semi-final. I can't remember who they played. Might have been Oldham. I'll have to check. No, it wasn't Oldham. But anyway, Man United were in the semis. And I remember Joe Royle coming out being absolutely fuming because the front of one of the papers said, all set for the glamour final, Spurs Man United. And I think Neville Southall and other Everton players have talked about this since and said they've already sorted the final. Like, how dare they? And Everton went and duffed us 4-1 at Elland Road. And obviously Everton went on to win the FA Cup.
Yeah.
And
all right out.
An unbeatable Manchester United side back then. So, you know, that was great for them. But I remember it might have been the Sun. I can't remember what paper they'd already put at the front, the glamour final, all set for the glamour final, Spurs, Man United. So again, it was a sort of a missed opportunity season, but yeah, Klinsmann has to be in there just in terms of me growing up and just the noises around me and what it would have been in this era. So yeah, Klinsmann number two.
Yeah, it's a bad week for me as a United fan that in 95. Lost the league at West Ham, couldn't score the winning goal, even though Blackburn lost at Liverpool. And a week later, right out, yes, the night as the FA, yeah, Cup, which as a 13-year-old, yes, I was pretty crestfallen in the summer of 95. But 96 was much better, in fairness, for loads of reasons. I've got both those on my list, Gazza and Klinsmann as well, to be fair, the Tottenham all time. What have you got next, Bridgie?
This was a tough one. And again, it goes along with my childhood and having to endure some seriously poor seasons with poor teams. I'm going for David Ginola. Because I remember my family and I were in Greece. And if you remember going on holiday when you were younger, you'd get yesterday's newspapers.
Yeah.
And there was no text messaging or anything like that. And we'd signed him. And there was a famous picture of him topless at Spurs, you know, with the 14 Ginola. Obviously, I mean, Tom will hate hearing it, but he'll acknowledge it as well. You know, Newcastle under Keegan were very exciting. You could see, everyone knew how good Ginola was for Newcastle United. And obviously, he had a fallout. Was it with Kenny Dalglish or a manager at the time at Newcastle? We signed him for a quite a nominal fee. And wow, I mean, what a player. What an absolutely unbelievable player. The magic. We won a trophy with him. We won the League Cup. And, you know, he was just such a glamorous man and, you know, stunning looking man. Obviously, we've got to say it, haven't we? You know, yeah. And he just oozed everything about. And again, people will be a bit surprised by me saying, you know, or maybe not. But again, I had a terrible Spurs childhood. Like we didn't win much. We were mid-table and, like, Sheringham left in 90, you know, around there, and it hurt so much. And again, he was one shining light of really drab seasons, and he was a phenomenal footballer. And he ended up falling out of favour with George Graham. They just didn't get on, and the fans never took to George Graham because of his Arsenal background. I actually didn't mind him because he won us a trophy, and I, you know, people wanting Glenn Hoddle in, and I said there was a bad decision. Turned out to be the case. But yeah, Ginola is in there for me. It wasn't an easy decision because I've left a couple out, and I'm looking now at the ones I've left out, and it's like I'm disgusted with myself. But I'm going to keep him in there just in terms of because it's a childhood reason.
Yeah, and actually, Tom, thinking about, we often talk about two-footed players, and I think he probably was maybe De Bruyne in the Premier League era, one of the most naturally two-footed. It was actually hard to work out what David Ginola's strong foot was.
Yeah, well, as I've always say, I'm quite sad. If a player is able to take a corner with his right foot and left foot, that really impresses me. And yeah, there's some players, I think there's three players, and I've forgotten the answer to this now, but there's a quiz question where three players in the Premier League have scored a penalty with both feet. And I know that one of them is Bobby Zamora. And I always say Obafemi Martins and Santi Cazorla, but I don't think actually they are the two.
Andros Townsend? Has he ever?
He's two-footed, but no, he's not. He's not the answer to that question, which I'm going to look up. But that really impresses me if you use both feet. And Ginola definitely could.
And as broadcasters, lads, the interesting thing was back in the 90s when foreign players started coming in, there was always the English pronunciation and the overseas pronunciation of your fancy, wasn't there? And it was David Ginola or David Ginola. That was a great type. Now we'd have to get our French pronunciation really correct. But in those days, it was like, I bet Thierry Henry was probably Terry Henry for the first couple of weeks back in those days. But it was because Ricky Villa was always Ricky Villa, wasn't he? In the back in the 80s, not Villa, but now we'd be calling him Villa. So it's interesting, like how we've come more on board with the pronunciations.
Do you know what, Teddy? It's really good that you've actually brought Ricky Villa up because, again, my dad, it's one of my dad's famous stories that Spurs have signed Ricky Villa and Ozzy Ardiles. He said it was the top story on BBC News at 10 back in the day when it happened, when the two Argentinian internationals, barely any non-UK players in the league at the time, and for them to come over, again, just like that, because you don't hear any rumours or agents or any sources or anything like that. So that's reasons why I bring these players up, because they were out of the blue and they were such humongous worldwide names. So to come to our club was fantastic.
Yeah, it's two players who've scored a penalty with both feet, and it was Zamora and Martins. That's who the two were. Nice. I thought it was three. So there you go. Impressive for me.
Yeah, yeah. It makes it tough for the keepers, doesn't it, to study you. That's brilliant. We can do that. So we've got three. We've got Gascoigne, Klinsmann, Ginola. What a three that would be in the team at the same time. What have you gone for next, Bridgie? I was thinking, were you getting any hard men? But I don't associate Tottenham with any hard men or enforcers at all.
Yeah, whoa, we've got me there. He was never hard. He ran away from Duncan Ferguson. lovely bloke though. Okay, so we've got two left. And my next one is Gareth Bale. For all he's won, I find him so underappreciated by just people in general. I just thought he's, you know, that goal in the Champions League final was probably one of the best goals I've ever seen at such a huge stage.
Yeah.
Spurs had, you know, they had Damien Comoli at the time, director of football, and I think he got a lot more right than he got wrong, and that, you know, Tottenham did well to get Bale at the time. And we can all remember, like, he didn't start so well, and there was this thing about Spurs were cursed with Gareth Bale. And, you know, there was a very strong chance that he was going to be loaned out and then maybe sold for Stuart Downing, those famous famous stories back then. But then when he just got into his groove, he was just, I mean, you guys remember, he was just unbelievable. There was one particular season, it was under Andre Villas-Boas. I think, honestly, probably the third best player in the world at one stage behind Messi and Ronaldo. The stuff he was doing. And then he got a really bad ankle injury. It was an awful challenge from Charlie Adam against Blackpool. And he came back at least a month early. But he still scored phenomenal goals. One was against, I think, Sunderland on the final day of the season. And yeah. Spurs completely...
2013, yeah. Paulo de Canio.
Unbelievable goal. And he did one a couple of weeks before that against Southampton. But both times, he was on the right-hand side, cut in, boom. And he scored an amazing goal at West Ham, scored an amazing goal at Manchester United. And it was a bit of a tragedy, really, when he came back second time round, because it was the COVID times, so no fans in the stadium. And it was sad, really, because the fans would love to have seen him back. And I think a big reason why it didn't massively work out, it wasn't necessarily because Jose Mourinho was the wrong manager for him. I just think the fans weren't there for him. But this is a guy that gets a little bit of criticism because he openly says about his love for golf and everything. But he was a really, really special player. Absolutely.
Do you think, Bridgie, he was destined for greatness, or do you think there was something that happened in terms of fortune that Tottenham ended up playing with a winger? Because he was a left back at the start, wasn't he, when he had that difficult run of not getting a win in the Spurs lineup?
Yeah, but he was at left back for a while, but he scored against Chelsea. And it's like, this guy is wasted as a left back. I mean, he's played as a forward, left winger. He's played on the right. He could have done anything. I think he had a few more injuries than he would have hoped, and that might have stopped him a little bit. But he won everything pretty much. I mean, with Real Madrid, was it three or four Champions Leagues?
Yeah. That goal in the Copa del Rey when he runs off the pitch and back on. Yeah.
And because maybe he wasn't this Ala Madrid and I love Real Madrid, I love being here, because maybe he didn't say that as much, then the fans didn't really take to him. But he did enough on the pitch. So again, just another player who comes to your ground and it's just, wow, you know, just love seeing him. So I put him in there. But again, it's just so difficult. So, so difficult.
Yeah, I'm half Welsh, so I appreciate that. But it was great, great runner with the ball, Tom, wasn't he? He'll be in the list of, I don't know, dribbling or just running with the ball, outrageous pace.
Well, it's when you think of dribbling, you think of like jinking inside and outside. Bale would just, he had such great, it wasn't like he was really quick off the mark. It was like these long strides where what I would call deceptively quick. So he'd actually just be able to knock the ball past a player. And even if he went round and off the pitch, like he did in the Champions League final, he would still end up getting the ball at the other side. And it was real, like, striding runs. And he was someone who could still ping the ball when he was at full pace, which is very hard. If you think about it, we're not professional footballers, but if you're running at full pace with the ball, how hard it is to then get a shot away, right, and get full power behind it. Bale could do that. And it wasn't the kind of conventional jinky dribbling which we've talked about, haven't we, with Stuart Ripley and with Gascoigne, and I mentioned Eden Hazard as well.
Yeah, Romario. Yeah,
exactly. But it seemed more effortless when it was Bale, and it was those long strides and well worthy of anyone's top five.
Yeah, that performance against Maicon in the Champions League into Milan, absolutely just humiliated. A great
defender. That's a great shout, because that was one of my first Champions League. I don't know. It was my first Champions League away game as a fan. And look, it's great in the San Siro, but it needs a lick of paint, put it that way, in the away end. And we were 4-0 down at half time, and we're down to 10 men. And I was thinking, this is a nightmare. Everyone at home will be laughing at us. This is ridiculous. And then Bale scores one. That's okay. Pulled one back. Oh my God, he's got another. Oh my God, he's got another. Every time down that left, bang, bang, bang. Same, like, absolutely unbelievable. I genuinely left that stadium that night feeling that we'd won. And the next day, the papers, Sky Sports News, it was Bale mania. And as you say there with the mic on, second leg, I mean, Rafa Benitez, don't know why he didn't look at what happened in the first leg and change it up, because he took him to the absolute cleaners, and we won 3-1 that night. Phenomenal. And, you know, we talk about when we, you know, our jobs, you know, Bale going to Real Madrid for 86 million. I remember being in our Sky Sports gallery. There was a camera all set up for Gareth Bale, and I was going, so bad of them. They've not even agreed a fee with us yet. And like, they've got this welcome Gareth banners and everything like that. But, and of course, you know, remember them saying, you know, Spurs signed 7 players with that Bale money, you know, and they said, Spurs have signed Elvis, but they've bought the Beatles, but it ends up, they bought Shawadi Wadi, really, because none of the replacements were good enough, apart from maybe Christian Eriksen. But but Bale is in there. But look, this is, as I say, for every play, this is so hard. I could have picked another 5 and been justified, honestly.
And Tom, I always remember the transfer fee being shrouded in mystery. Do you remember there was some sort of politics that Real Madrid were anxious that it couldn't be more than they'd signed Cristiano Ronaldo for, because it would upset Ronaldo? That was all that debate about.
I can't remember what Cristiano Ronaldo was, but I remember Bale was more like 80.
They had to then
say, oh, well, actually, it's not as much as that, because we don't want to upset Cristiano. Which is, if that's true, I mean, that is absolutely pathetic. That's like... Yeah. I mean, can you imagine that with us being presenters? Can you imagine one of the other presenters saying, oh, you can't say that show has got... You can't say that show has got more viewers than mine, because I have to have the most viewers. So can you please massage the figures to keep me happy?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But Real, that's the thing. Real Madrid did it, didn't they?
Yeah, especially I did the overnight records, 2 a.m. It's probably like people... I'm sure my audiences aren't too healthy.
I think it was 86.5. in the end. So Cristiano, if you're listening, 86.5.
There he goes. It was just inflation, Cristiano, just inflation between 2009 and 2013. That's all it was. So we come to number 5. I'm excited. Who have you gone for?
5. Everyone listening, this is easy peasy. Harry Kane, Tottenham's leading all-time goal scorer, who gave me many, many years of wonderful goals, wonderful football. England captain under Tottenham Hotspur, a proud England captain, great person. I have zero animosity for him. And he's just a wonderful striker, can do absolutely everything and anything. It's hilarious how there are some people now who acknowledge it because he plays for Bayern and not Spurs. People who say, look at that goal, look at that pass. I've said, I've seen it for years. So, I'm Harry Kane. Easiest decision in my top 5. Easy.
And you know what about Harry Kane as well, Bridgie? And I think I've mentioned this to Tom. He exposes those of us who didn't make it as professional footballers. Because when we look at Thierry Henry, when we look at Ryan Giggs, we think, oh, genetically, I never had the makeup to do that. But Harry Kane, you look at him, he looks exhausted half the time. He's not particularly quick. He works very hard. But actually, it was just that, wasn't it? He, on the training field, maybe a bit like David Beckham, he just did so much work that he became so skilled at what he did.
Yeah, I mean, there was a game years ago, well over 10 odd years ago now, where I went with my dad. It was Barnet v Tottenham. It was Tottenham's reserves. And my dad and I both said, I don't think he's going to make it. I mean, he had so many loans as well. So we were just thinking that eventually they'll have to sell him. And then all of a sudden, he just came into the side. He scored in the Europa League against Shamrock Rovers. I was at that game, but then he sort of went away again. Then he scored a deflected goal at Villa, a free kick, which we ended up winning the game. The rest is absolute history. He went on an amazing goal scoring run under Pochettino in his first season, and he didn't look back. Scored top scorer every season after that, and England's record goal scorer. I'll say it again, and it really used to wind me up. It doesn't as much now because he's not a Tottenham player, but he underappreciated, undervalued, mocked at times. Just can do everything, absolutely everything. His passing as well is just out of this world. Yeah. So, you know, and some would argue that Bayern probably got him for a decent fee, you know, and I know there's a few Spurs fans who are kind of like chuckling a little bit that Bayern aren't top. If people had asked, you know, if you want my opinion on it, I don't really care what he wins. He deserves it. And I don't really care if he wins the Bundesliga. Okay, you know, if Bayern gone on to win the Champions League this season, I'm sure a lot of people will have a pop at Spurs fans and he's won this, he's won that. But I think, you know, Spurs fans need to appreciate that. It's great what him being in Munich and not watching him at a Chelsea or a Manchester United. I mean, both those clubs not in that kind of thinking at the moment, but and they certainly were last summer. They certainly were. So, yeah, out of sight, out of mind, really. But, yeah, some amazing memories for him.
Great, great top five. We'll quickly get to, I think, if Tom, have you got a five? I've got a five. I'll rattle off. There's been an overlap there anyway, but there's a couple that aren't on Bridgie's list. But, Bridgie, any ones that you want to mention? You said some difficult ones you had to leave out.
Some honourable mentions. I'm sure I forgot them as well. Rafael van der Vaart, Darren Anderton, Luka Modric, Teddy Sheringham was a tough one to leave out. Another real tough one to leave out, Ledley King, Michael Dawson, Hugo Lloris, captain for 10 years, Heung-Min Son, current player. And then you've got your Edgar Davids, your Michael Carricks. So we've had some top players.
Yeah, I'd have my five would be Gascoigne, Lineker, Klinsmann, Sheringham, obviously Man United connection as well, and Heung-Min Son I had on my list. Just because Son, if you actually look at some of the goals he scored, they're absolutely ridiculous. And the way he played the game with his smile on his face.
Yeah.
I was considering Callum Davenport, Gregor Zraziak, Bongani Kamalo, Jonathan Blundell. I've mentioned some of them. Erik Torsvet, because like I don't know what it was, but like I used to actually like goalkeeper shirts. Like I had
that yellow
1990
one.
Peter Shilton, yellow and blue. I had both 1990 England goalkeeper kits. So I always liked Erik Torsvet. He's one of the first goalkeepers that I can remember. I've mentioned Gascoigne and Lineker. I know they're obvious ones, so I'll go. I could have listed a load of players who've played for Tottenham and Sunderland. There's actually been loads. Yeah. And funny enough, Callum Davenport was one of them. I'm only going to put one in who's played for both, and that is Danny Rose. We only had him. You know when you said you didn't have Klinsmann for very long? We only had Danny Rose for one season.
Yeah.
And he was amazing for us. It was under Martin O'Neill on loan, and then Paolo Di Canio finished the season. I always remember being at, we beat Newcastle 3-0 away under Di Canio, and one of the Newcastle fans, a friend of mine, said to me, who was your left fullback? Because his name's Danny Rose on loan from Tottenham. And he said, that's the best left back I've seen here all season at St. James's Park. Remember, people like Ashley Cole.
Yeah.
Played there that season. Evra. He was amazing for us. He was, of course. He was amazing for us. I don't think people outside of Sunderland realise how good he was for us. He was so good. We were saying we need to move him into central midfield so he can be more influential.
Yeah.
But back. And I remember Harry Redknapp, when he was at Tottenham, Danny Rose was supposed to be a left winger, and he said he's not good enough to be a left winger. He's going to have to accept his left back. And that's when he scored that volley against Arsenal, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It was after that Redknapp said that. So Danny Rose, and I'm going to, one that will really shock you here, I used to say he was the most underrated player in the Premier League. No one's going to agree with me, Bridget. I think you're going to laugh, but I loved Victor Wanyama.
Oh, no. I actually thought you were going to say Mr. Dembele then.
Dembele could have had him, but Wanyama, I loved him.
No, he was a great signing. Him and Dembele were good together. But actually, it's funny. If you ask any player, Kane, anyone on that era, who was the best player they played with, they all say Moussa Dembele.
Yeah, who's unreal.
So I didn't have him either. I mean, Luka Modric, he started on the left wing at Tottenham. Started on the left wing. And Harry, classic Harry, like, I got him in the middle. He didn't get him in the middle for ages. We lost to Portsmouth in the semis and he was left wing. But I remember they put him in the middle and me and my dad were like, you know, like my dad always says this, and I love it. It's like a snooker player, like potting. And when you someone who can pass a ball, when they can see something, which no other player on the pitch can, and Chelsea were desperate for him. We didn't send him to Chelsea because of, one, the rivalry, and two, there was a lot of animosity after Frank Arnesen left Spurs, the director for Chelsea, and we actually held out and sold him to Real Madrid. And look at Modric. He'd probably be one of the greatest, well, top 50 Real Madrid legends. I mean, he's been there for what? Over 10 years, won the lot with Real Madrid, you know, so I could have had him as well. So, Sheringham, I feel like I've just about left him out, but it's difficult when you get five. But yeah, it was that was a tough one, Teddy. I've got to say.
When we had Pete on, for his top five ever Newcastle players, right? He had Callum Wilson in his top five ever.
He said he had to have it was strikers only, wasn't it?
He decided to only pick strikers, all right? But still, I mean, excellent striker, no doubt, but top five of all time.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one, Pete.
No, you can run through five in your head, can't you? Even strikers before that. But no, I love it. It's a great top five. And it's amazing to me that Tom, for the first time ever on the podcast, hasn't managed to squeeze Jermaine Defoe into this, because I presume this would be an open goal.
It was too obvious. It was too obvious, Jermaine Defoe. That's why I couldn't do it. And I do mention him in everything I mentioned Jermaine Defoe. So I left him out.
Yeah, that's a great shout, Defoe. I can't believe I've not put that there, because signing him from West Ham originally under David Pleat, and this kid reminded me of Ian Wright, the way he just got out of nowhere, stuck the ball in the net. He was desperately unlucky. I've just realised I've forgotten Berbatov as well, who was an absolute dream of a
Robbie
striker.
Robbie Keane, yeah.
Robbie Keane, oh my God! Guys, see what I mean?
It's hard.
Keane, Defoe and Berbatov. And I remember Defoe running up and down on the touchline on the bench. It's like, what a waste. But then it's like, but you've got Keane and Defoe breaking Premier League records as a partnership. So, boys, I can't believe I've left out Berbatov.
Well, it shows you how lucky. Not many trophies for Tottenham, but how many players you've had, flair players there.
But this is it. This is why. And people always get annoyed about why did Tottenham get it. It's because these players, they could always... There's always classic goals. But before, I know we've got to go, but like, there's a story with like, I was a ball boy at Tottenham, and Ian Walker was like, we'd never sign an autograph for any player or anyone, and every other player was lovely, and I always had a thing for Ian Walker. I never liked him because of that. So when we sold Erik Torsvedt, Tom's favourite, I was absolutely devastated. But yeah, that's
Erik the Viking.
The Viking.
He came on Sky Sports News recently, and some of the younger guys were like, who's Erik Torsvedt? And I was like, who's Erik Torsvedt? This is an absolute legend to interview. It's funny, generational. All right, Tom's got his dentist appointment coming up, but quickly on the quiz question.
Yes,
we have to shoot. He's probably getting some extra whitening applied. It's going to be like,
remember, I've never drank tea or coffee in my life, or red wine. Never drank any of those three things, so my teeth are the color they are supposed to be. I've never had to do it.
Oh, wow.
It's a sharp haircut.
Every Friday 9 a.m
Every Friday, it's his haircut. It's incredible,
isn't it?
Every
Friday, 9 a.m.
He's ready.
He's ready for Saturday. But the quiz question was, who scored the first goal in the 1991 FA Cup final? It was ultimately won by Tottenham Hotspur, of course, 2-1 against Nottingham Forest. Michael, as you're the guest, what do you have?
That's Stuart Pearce.
Yes, Stuart Pearce, free kick.
I was going to get that wrong, you know, because in my mind, I see Paul Stewart scoring, then Pearce equalising, and then the Des Walker own goal. But I've got that wrong.
And I forgot that Lineker had a penalty saved by Mark Crossley in that penalty as well.
It was all going wrong. Really was. And that was the year where Arsenal had won the league. And, you know, Spurs had some, as I said earlier in the pod, some severe financial difficulties. So out of nowhere, winning the cup. And look, it's... Talk about trophies. Spurs have won a lot of trophies. They've just not won enough recently. And, you know, when I was growing up, the FA Cup, we'd won the most FA Cups. And so for Arsenal to have the most FA Cups, no, painful. So, you know, it's such a special competition. I wish Sky would still have it.
No, me too. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's been way, way too long. But yeah, so yeah, that top five, guys, was difficult. Oh. And the fact I've missed out the Keynes and the Berbatovs and Defoes on the... And could have added. I'm going to go in a dark room and give myself a little hit on the head.
We gave him a mention. It was brilliant list. Callum Davenport got a couple of mentions as well, which is fantastic. And I do wish we had FA Cup A, because I love the FA Cup. People say, has it lost its magic? Not for me. Obviously, being a United fan, 1990 was one of the first summers I got into football. So that was huge. And also, it would be great tonight, Tom, if I wasn't going in to do my late shift and going to be reading Chirons all night with, I think, four games today or whatever.
Think yourself lucky, Teddy. I now hate the FA Cup because remember what happened three Saturdays ago? We lost to Newcastle in the third round. So, FA Cup, as far as I'm concerned, it's now a Mickey Mouse competition.
You'll be back. 2024, 2025, Sunderland might win it. Who knows? Gents, thank you very much. Speak to you soon. Michael, thank you very much for coming on the pod. Brilliant to have you on.
Absolute pleasure. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Tom. Catch you next week.
Guys.